from the beautiful mountains of Western North Carolina, just outside the Blue Ridge Parkway, under the stars and around our mysterious blue planet, you are listening to
Shadows of Dark.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Shadows in the Dark right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jeremiah Gray. I'm glad to see so many starting to pile in the chat room with us there. I really appreciate that. And tonight, we're going to have a show that may be a little bit shocking to some. We're going to be talking about Operation Gladio with our very own conspiracy researcher, Olaf Phillips. So this is going to be a very, very interesting show, and he's going to be connecting some dots for us and see exactly where all this fits into, you know, what's happened in the past, what's happening today. So if you're not familiar with Operation Gladio, you make sure to stick around for the entire show because this is going to be a great, great show. Now, of course, before we get to that, we've got a few things to get out of the way. The first thing is, of course, our Halloween show. I said that we will be announcing who our winner of our Choose the Halloween Show contest, was going to be tonight. So I think it's only fitting we go ahead and do that because that's when I said it was going to happen. So, as you know, just kind of briefly, what we've done is if you were a member of our forum or if you signed up for the forum, or had the chance to at least post your idea for the Halloween show, well, that's how we done it. We kind of, you posted and we just kind of chose who we thought had the best idea. And the winner of that is going to get a $15 gift certificate to our web store. Now, a little bit of a tough decision here. There was some great ideas that come in there. One that was just really fantastic. It was an awesome idea. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do it because it would take some time to put together, but I think maybe something we do in the future, whether on the next Halloween or even just a show. So this is how we had to do it. Well, we basically gave it to two winners, more or less. Basically, we're going to mix a couple of ideas is really what's going to go on. So the first one is Anthea, our After Dark Radio, who is in the chat room with us. Her idea was to let people call in and tell their ghost stories. So we're going to be doing that during our Halloween show. And the other one was actually Knox's idea, who is also in the chat room there, suggested that we play some Halloween-themed music, Monster Mash, Werewolves of London, things along those lines also. So I thought that was a great idea. I think it'd be great to mix those two. So Knock said that if he was chosen as one of the winners to give his prize to someone else. So what I did, instead of giving, because Toppy from Topcast had just such a wonderful idea. I mean, this idea was, it was really a great idea, and I wish we had the time to put it together. So what we're going to do is instead of giving, we're going to kind of split the prize, but I didn't want to split it in two $7.50 gift certificates. So Anthea, After Dark Radio, will be getting a $10 gift certificate, and Toppy, since his was really such a great idea, unfortunately we're not going to be able to do it, it's going to take Knox's prize, which was Knox's idea, by the way, will also receive a $10 gift certificate to our web store. So if you want to check out the web store, it is at www.shadowsinthedarkradio.com. You can click on the link that says store and check that out. So again, congratulations to Anthea and Toppy, as well as Knock, of course, for winning the gift certificates for our Choose Our Halloween Show contest. And that is, so what we're going to do Halloween night from 10 p.m. Eastern time to midnight is we're going to let you call in, tell your ghost stories, as well as play some Halloween-themed music. So make sure to tune in for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to that. Being our second Halloween show, so lots and lots of fun. All right, so well, let's get to a little news here, and then let's get this show rolling. So let's see what's going on around the world today. Some interesting stories going on. Well, first off, the MOD has released some more of their UFO-related files. Now, these cover the period from 1986 to 1992. Quite a good handful of files there. You can download them for free. They're in PDF format. So if you want to check that out, just go to ufos.nationalarchives.gov.uk. So I was there today, as a matter of fact, downloading my little heart out. So you should have checked that if you really like kind of that kind of stuff, kind of some neat things. All right, here we go, some more news. If you haven't heard of the prophet Yahweh, he's been in the news off and on for quite a number of years now. Well, he is predicting that spaceships will appear on October the 31st. Now, here we go with some more ships appearing. Of course, we just got done missing the Blossom Goodchild prediction. But he claims that, well, according to him, sometime before November the 11th, 2008, more than likely before the presidential elections, and possibly on October 31st, 2008, at around noontime, spaceships will start appearing on his summons request and hover over his school in Las Vegas for the media to see and film. Now, if you're not familiar, he has a school that actually teaches you how to summon UFOs, and that's what he's known for. In anticipation of the spaceship's descent, the prophet Yahweh is planning to install live internet broadcast streaming capability at his school. He is doing this so people will like and see him call down the spaceships on October 31st, 2008. And, you know, they said they will appear the entire time up in the sky. Now, very interesting stuff. Now, if one thing that he did do that kind of shocked some people, even a reporter, was on May 25th in 2005, KTNV, ABC TV 13 in Las Vegas, Nevada, did contact the prophet Yahweh to do to kind of show his summoning abilities, in which something did actually appear. You can search around in there and find that video. So we'll see. Let's see if this one hits. October 31st, 2008. We'll mark that date down and see what happens. The Kingsway tunnels, originally built in 1942 to protect Londoners from German air raids, they are being put up for sale by their current owner, the telecommunications company, BT Group PLC. The tunnels, which are about a mile long, were taken over by Britain's Foreign Intelligence Agency, M16, in 1944. The Guardian newspaper said a section of the spy agency known as the Inter-Services Research Bureau used the tunnels until May 8, 1945, when it stripped them clean, leaving a question mark over the exact nature of its underground activities. BT said that the tunnels were then used by the government's public record office to store some 400 tons of highly sensitive documents. They then became property of Britain's post office, which at the time ran Britain's telephone network, and used the site as a telephone exchange to connect long-distance calls called a trunk exchange. It was through this reinforced warrant that the 1960s hotline connecting the leaders of U.S. and Soviet Union was routed. By the 1980s, when it became the property of BT, it housed secure data backup services and served closed-circuit television cameras. So it is up for sale. There's a little piece of World War II history up for sale. So, hey, if you want to purchase some tunnels, there is the place to go. Well, NASA is saying there is no quick fix for the broken Hubble telescope. Their efforts to get the Hubble telescope working again have hit a snag, and engineers are trying to figure out their next step. Officials had hoped that to have the 18-year-old observatory back in business Friday after it stopped sending pictures 3 weeks ago, but a pair of problems cropped up, and now recovery operations are on hold. It's unclear how long the telescope will be prevented from transmitting. The soonest it could be operating fully again is late next week. At worst, the observatory might remain inactive until astronauts arrive with a replacement part next year. Yeah, I enjoy looking at those images that come back from that. Here we got about some rare white lions. A pride of white lions, including two adult males and two juvenile females, have been released in the Sambona Wildlife Reserve in South Africa's Western Cape province. The release is the culmination of a years-long white lion project, which was sponsored by the Shamwari Dubai World Africa Conservation Team. I got to quit picking news stories. I find the names hard to pronounce. The white lions are also called blonde lions and are the same species of African lions. Whether blonde or tawny-colored, the African lion populations are dwindling due to poaching, habitat destruction, and disease. So a little edge, some white lines. If you get a chance, go check out the picture. I mean, this is a beautiful line. It is solid white. It's got the huge mane. I mean, it is amazing. Just an amazing picture. Well, North Korea, it is said that North Korea will make an important announcement on Monday, which is probably their Monday now, and amid speculations over the health of its leader, Kim Jong-il. The 66-year-old North Korean leader disappeared from public view in mid-August and failed to make appearances on two important national holidays, leading to speculation he was seriously ill. U.S. and South Korean officials said he suffered a stroke and had brain surgery, but North Korea has denied that he is ailing. There is speculation that the announcements could be about Kim's death or a government change induced by a coup. So we'll see what's happening over there. Always kind of a hot spot in the world over in North Korea, so we'll keep an eye on that. Well, let's take a quick little break, and when we return, like we said, we're going to talk about Operation Gladio, which is just a very interesting thing, and we're going to be joined by our very own conspiracy researcher, and that is Olaf Phillips. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a minute.
Want more from Shadows in the Dark? Visit our website and sign up for our free newsletter. Become a member in our forum and check out our online store. Just visit www.shadowsinthedarkradio.com, where the darkness is illuminated.
Olaf Phillips has just become a regular guest on the show, and like I said, he has become pretty much Shadows in the Dark's resident conspiracy researcher, which we are very lucky to have him as that much as a part of the show, and we definitely have a lot of new listeners. So just briefly, he is also the founder of Anomalies.net, which is a site that compiles a lot of great information. Olaf, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back again.
Well, this only makes about, like, number 9, something like that. So
I have no idea. I don't count them anymore.
It is such a, like I said, I mean, no, definitely not stretching it there. It's such an honor to have you, such a huge part of the show. And you continually come back, give us, you know, updates on what's going on around the world. Just give us that, you know, a whole different perspective, and in which, of course, we're going to be doing again tonight, talking about Operation Gladio.
Well, I also want to mention that it's a great honor on my part to be involved in Shadows of the Dark. I think, you know, I've done other radio shows and like many of your guests, and I just keep coming back to this one. I mean, I want to be involved in this because it's such a fine show.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, let's get into Operation Gladio. Now, I have to be honest here. Up until, you know, I guess maybe a couple months ago or a little longer maybe, you actually brought this to my attention. So it was something new to me. I can't say, you know, I know a lot about the, you know, the conspiracies that are out there, the conspiracy world. It wasn't something I was big into. But immediately, you know, telling me about it and watching some of the videos about this, it's stunning to even, you know, to think that, you know, this isn't really a theory. It is known to have been there. Right. This is real. This is not a conspiracy theory.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those rare times when, as a conspiracy researcher, conspiracy nut, whatever you want to call me, this is one of those rare times. I pace in my backyard, just so everybody knows that. This is one of those rare times when everything I'm about to tell you is true, and it's real, and it can be proven, and it's a matter of record. I'm sure you can hear him.
Yeah.
My wife secreted him away to Thomas the Tank Engine Time. Sorry, guys. You know, it kind of blows my credibility. It's like, yes, I'm a big-time conspiracy researcher, and my son is going to watch Thomas the Tank Engine. Yes, everybody, I do have a family. I do have a real life. I am a real person. I go to Home Depot. Although I don't go to Walmart, but that's a whole other show. So, anyway, you know, a lot of times when you do conspiracy stuff, it's kind of nebulously connecting the dots. If you're ever familiar with an old show by the name of Connections with James Burke, you know, the one that always comes to my mind is he starts out his show and he has a briefcase and he's just kind of talking about things in general. And then he says, by the way, do you want to know what this briefcase is? Well, it's a nuclear bomb. And then he throws it up in the air. And when he throws it up in the air, he now spends the next, 56 minutes connecting all the dots on how you went from, Stone Age man to a nuclear bomb in a briefcase. I probably set off echelon now, but hey, why not? So, you know, this is one of those times when it's very clear. This is not nebulously connecting the dots. This is a real operation. It is named something different now. The most famous part of it is the Italian group, which was called Operation Gladio. Gladio only refers to the Italian component of this this group. You know, it's so vast that you almost struggle trying to comprehend the vastness of what these guys have done. But Gladio is the Italian component. There are components of this organization in every country, including the United States, Canada, Mexico, every NATO country, Japan, South Korea, North Korea, I don't know about, but, you know, Australia. I mean, pretty much any Western culture, Western country has the organizations tied back to what is ostensibly known as Gladio. This is also a very hard show for me to do because it's a little scary. I mean, when you start to comprehend exactly what Gladio, we'll just call it Gladio to make it easy, because you can go on Google and type in Gladio and you'll just find a buttload of information. But when you start to realize what this is and what it means, it's actually quite scary. And this is not one of those times where, you know, I'm going to be doing a lot of joke cracking and other things. This is a very hard topic for me to cover because even as somebody who researches conspiracies, this bothers me. And there are very few, you know, whether you look at radar bases on the moon or, you know, did we land on the moon? You know, was Yuri Gagarin the first guy in orbit? I mean, these are all kind of nebulous conspiracies. They're kind of abstracted enough that you can kind of blow them off in your daily life, right? Well, do we land on the moon? Maybe, maybe not. Does it really matter when I go to work? No.
Yeah.
This does. This absolutely impacts everything you understand about how the world truly operates. And the implications of it are just so vast and so disturbing that it's a very hard show for me. So if I stumble around a little bit, it's because I'm trying to figure out how to put into words what these guys do. So
no problem. Well, let's start off with exactly how Gladio came about.
Okay, well, it was first it was first conceived of by Winston Churchill, who was the then leader of the United Kingdom in about 1940. Early on in the war, as they were siding with the Russians in order to fight the Germans, the Western powers, you know, unoccupied France, you know, the free French, the free Belgians, the Americans, Canadians, the Australians, the English, they ultimately saw the next war being fought against the Russians. Good, bad, right, wrong, that's immaterial. But they saw the next battlefield being in Europe against the Russians. that before they even signed the armistice with the Russians to fight the Germans and to make the Grand Alliance, they were already planning the next war. There's actually a famous quote that I can't give it to you verbatim, but effectively, Patton, who was a Third Army commander, and he was a lunatic. He brilliant general, but an absolute lunatic. At one point, if you'd ever seen the movie of George G. Scott, you know, I read the biography, so this is true. This really did happen, but the movie of George G. Scott is actually pretty good. He went into a hospital, and there were these guys that they had just fought a major battle. There were a lot of people who were wounded, and there was a guy who had shell shock, and Patton was like, you know, comforting his men. I mean, he was a soldier's general. He was a soldier. He had prepared his entire life to fight. You know, this is what he knew, what he understood. It's everything he was. Walked up to a soldier, said, "Hey, what's wrong with you?" The guy says, "Well, I have shell shock." He slapped him, ordered him back to the front, and called him a coward. So this guy was pretty intense. Well, he said that he told his superiors when the war ended, he said, "Okay, we're done with the Germans. When do you want me to go attack the Russians?" So the Russians were the Soviet Union, not the Russians, but the Soviet Union was always a target. It had always been a target. It was seen as the next great target. Well, very quickly, the Allies minus the Soviet Union, figured out that this was the case. So what they did is they engineered a vast network of, think of it as sub-armies. So you have a big army, and then you have, like, divisions, and then battalions, or regiments, I think, then battalions, you know, yada, yada. Well, picture a massive army that's geographically dispersed all around the world. Originally just in Europe, but now all around the world, okay? The army is made up of cells, like a terrorist cell. These cells are now primarily fascist groups and were designed to be left behind in the event... Sorry, I'm on call. See, I have a job too. I'm sure you know all about that.
Yeah.
sorry. But they were left behind. They were called leave behinds. They were designed, these cells were designed to be left behind in the event of a Soviet invasion. The invasion would sweep across where they were located. The cells would become active and carry out, subversive warfare, guerrilla warfare against the Soviets once they had, the line had passed them and they were now behind enemy lines. These groups, the members of which were committed to dying for their cause. So they said, "We hate the communists more than we hate you guys." They're fascists. They were like Nazis. "We hate the communists more than we hate you. So leave us behind and we'll die taking out as many communists as we can." Okay? Mm-hmm. So what they did is they left caches of weapons and they left caches of gold, because gold is the universal currency. It doesn't matter if you're behind enemy lines or in front of them, you can always use gold to pay for anything that you need. Bribe soldiers, whatever you want, you always use gold. So they left behind vast amounts of gold, weapons, food, telecommunications equipment, whatever, in caches spread all over the world, waiting for this Armageddon-sized apocalyptic war against the Soviet Union. That's basically what Gladio is. And it was eventually, it moved from being an English-sponsored operation originally, where they went out and they co-opted former Nazis that were part of the wolf packs that Otto Skorzeny had designed to be leave behinds after the Allies had invaded Germany. Skorzeny had seen the same problem. And Skorzeny, if you don't know who he was kind of like Hitler's private commando. He's the guy who got Mussolini out without firing a shot. He carried out all sorts of commando operations, assassinations. I mean, eventually he became the head of secret police for Juan Perón in Argentina. I mean, he was a very well-connected, very lethal guy. And he designed these things actually, I think they're called the werewolves. They were cells that were designed to stay behind after the Allies had passed, and then blow up bridges, you know, disrupt communication lines, kill soldiers, whatever, after we had already invaded Germany. Well, the Allies went to these guys and said, "You hate the communists more than us. Now you work for us." And so they co-opted all these leave-behinds to operate against the Russians in the event of a Soviet invasion.
Hmm.
So that's basically where it comes from. It eventually was taken over by NATO. It became an official NATO operation. They're called the NATO stay-behinds and NATO leave-behinds. They took on different names in each country. But the one that's the most famous is the one that was exposed, which is Gladio. And I mean, the things that they did, I mean, there's just a laundry list of what they've done. It's horrendous.
Mm. All right. Now, so I guess, you know, the one, like I said, it was exposed Gladio. So that's the one out of Italy, right?
That's the one out of Italy, right?
Okay. Now, just so you know, a lot of our listeners know, even you have it posted up on your website as well. There, BBC ran a story on this. It was a three-part series.
It was a three-part series. It was run in 1991. It's my understanding. I could be wrong, but what I've heard is a guy who made the documentary was murdered. It's never been aired since, and it is a complete and utter dismantling of how what Gladio is and how it functions.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
for
the worst part.
Yeah. I was going to say. Well, for anybody that might be interested in checking out the videos, go ahead and give your website so they can watch. Because I've watched them. I mean, there's it's three part. I think they're like 45 or so minutes long a piece.
Yeah, I think they're 45 minutes. It's www.anomalies.net, and you can actually see the videos at video.anomalies.net and just do a search on Gladio. If you go to the website, under conspiracies, you'll see under interesting topics, I think I called it, there's a link to Gladio, and that's a whole bunch of information about Gladio. You can even see the Gladio logo, like everything in this world that has a logo, both the NATO one and the quote-unquote Italian Gladio official logo. and there are links to the videos. There's a chronology, pretty much all the basics of what you need to know about these guys.
Mm-hmm. And I was kind of going. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying I was kind of going there myself.
Okay. Now, the thing to remember about Gladio is that Gladio by itself is horrendous enough. The idea that NATO has its own private army that is beholden to no one. They are beholden to no government. They're external to every government. They operate outside of the NATO chain of command. They are supplied by the CIA, MI6. I forget the name of the operation in Germany, the Carabinieri in Italy, the Gendarmerie in Belgium. These guys all supply Gladio. They all supported Gladio, and they all covered up Gladio. And it is probably up until the mid-80s when it was released, and the Italian division of Gladio was basically sacrificed. I think I have my own theory about what actually that was, but up until that point, it was probably the greatest military secret ever, because nobody had ever heard of them, nobody knew what the hell they were, and they kept it that way for over 40 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, 40 years, my God.
And the fact that a stay-behind network exists, this is not necessarily that bad. I mean, you know, we're all children of the Cold War, at least most of us are. I had drills in my school when I was in elementary school, duck and cover. You know, we all watched The Day After. I mean, this, you know, these are things that we all experienced. So the idea that there's a stay-behind network that's designed to disrupt the Russians, sorry, the Soviet Union, we always call them the Russians, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's just the nebulous Russian. But the idea that a stay-behind network existed, you know, secretively, this is not necessarily that bad of a thing. I'm a conspiracy guy, but there are certain secrets. secrets that should be kept, and they're kept for good reason. And I think that Gladio, as it was originally intended, is a good reason to keep the secret. The problem is that what Gladio became, and that is the real crux of what bothers me so much personally.
Okay. Well, let's kind of get into some what exactly became and what they began doing, and you know, if we can give some examples, that would be great.
Sure. So let me go through what they became, and then we can hit some good examples.
Yeah.
And again, these are pointed out in the videos. There's a chronology that lists all the terrorist operations that Gladio carried out. But basically, what Gladio became was a private paramilitary operation that people in power could use to further their own political agendas. Now, the first thing that you have to recognize is that Gladio is primarily built around fascist organizations. So these guys are basically Nazis. Fascists are a little different than Nazis. It's a political ideology. But if you need a good example of, you know, what a fascist is, that would be Franco in Spain, Hitler, Mussolini. These guys were fascists. Okay, they were nationalists, and they were fascists. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, basically what happened was that eventually what occurred is that the fascist organizations went to their handlers and said, we're a paramilitary group, we are capable of carrying out operations, we're tired of sitting around waiting for the Russians or the Soviet Union to invade us. We would like to do some pleasant things to bring fascism back into power, okay? And this is what was called the strategy of tension. So basically what happened is that Gladio eventually modified its objective and said, we want to reinstall ourselves in power. We want to bring the Fourth Reich around, for lack of a better term. You know, you go from the Third Reich to the Fourth Reich, right? So what they started to do with full state sponsoring is they started to carry out terrorist operations and blame the communists. And so you would have a bombing. Pick one, the Plaza de Fortuna in Italy, right? They bombed it. They blew it up. They killed, like, I think, 80 or 100 people. And then they blamed it, you know, on Red Brigade, which was is kind of a militant communist group. So they would subvert the communists and make the communists look like they're evil, and by doing that, scare the population into wanting the fascists to come back into power and to do such lovely things as warrantless wiretapping, suspension of civil rights, suspension of something like the Bill of Rights that most countries have. And the idea is we would trade our freedom for safety, because they create a aura of tension where the entire population is scared, and we trade our freedom for the government to step in, take away our rights, take away our guns, whatever you want to, you know, whatever your personal slant is on it, and step in and say, I can protect you from these evil communists. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
So they basically excelled at carrying out what are called false flag operations, and they blame the, primarily because they were fascists, they blame the communists. So you see the Gladio carrying out operations and blaming Bader-Meinhof. You see them, you know, Black October, Red Brigade, Shining Path in Peru. A lot of the operations that when I was younger, I saw as, you know, XYZ communist organization blowing up a train station, you know, is now, well, it wasn't actually the communist, it was the fascist doing it to scare the people in Italy into wanting the fascists back in power.
Right. That's just kind of, that's scary.
Sure, and the scariest part of all is when you start to realize that these guys exist in every country.
Mm-hmm. And that's and kind of exactly what I mean, you know, sounding familiar, even, you know, Anthea kind of picking up on it there in the chat room sounds like what's going on now with the terrorist threat.
Exactly. That's so basically what, you know, you could extrapolate from this is that instead of blaming the communists, now they're blaming militant, Islamic extremists. I mean, it's pretty much fill in the blank, you know, bad guy, you know, we'll blame them and we'll do it ourselves. And there are many famous cases. I have a few notes here of some operations that they carried out. And these are older because these were exposed when Gladio was exposed in Italy. But it kind of gives you an idea of what they did. And it's like an all-star cast, you know, of who was involved. In 1964, the Italian group staged a coup, coup d'etat. let's see, what else we've got in here? Okay, in 1967, the Hellenic raiding force staged a coup d'etat in Greece. In Mozambique, the Portuguese group staged a coup d'etat and overthrew the president there. In 1969, there was Piazza Fontana massacre. In 1970, there was a Spanish group that attempted to assassinate an Italian dignitary. In 1971, there was the Turkish group created a coup d'etat. In 1972, there was a bombing. And actually, the one in 1972 is really interesting because the guy who carried it out was a guy named Vincenzo Vinicaguerra. And actually, Vincenzo Vinicaguerra was part of a group called, I believe it was like Ordo Novium, New Order. And he, in the videos, when you watch the BBC videos, he's the one, he's kind of like your tour guide into this vast conspiracy. He's a very weird guy. When you watch the videos, you know, he's very well-spoken, very articulate, very calm, very calmly describes planting a bomb that killed these three Carabinieri guys. They had gotten the bomb-making materials from the Carabinieri. They had hidden the bomb-making materials in a Carabinieri police station. Ordo Novium got pissed off because the Carabinieri were not working fast enough to install the fascists in power, so he turned around and blew up three of them to teach them a lesson. And he, you know, he's like your kind of tour guide through the Gladio operation. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, I just covered, what, like 10 years?
Yeah.
You know, there was another excellent case that involved CIA operatives in Belgium. There was a joint exercise where these CIA counterterrorists were supposed to, they just called them American agents, but they were, you know, CIA counterterrorists were supposed to break into a gendarmerie. One thing you have to understand is that in America we're a little different. In most European countries, they have kind of like a nationalized paramilitary police, right? So if you ever go to Spain, they're called the Guardia Civil, the Civil Guards. In Italy, they're called the Carabinieri. In Belgium, they're called the Gendarmerie. you know, most countries, those are the ones that come to mind offhand, most countries in Europe have these kind of nationalized paramilitary police, and they're kind of national police. Okay, we kind of have the FBI. You might think of them like the FBI, but they have a much more in-your-face kind of presence, where the FBI is kind of the guys in the suits. They run around, you know, investigating various things from terrorism to extortion, organized crime. These guys do that, and they drive around, like in the case of the Carabinieri, they drive around in Alfa Romeos, you know, with automatic weapons, and they kind of patrol the streets, and, you know, so, like, if you go to Rome, you'll see the Carabinieri standing around guarding things. If you go to Spain, you'll see the Guardia Civil standing around with their rifles, you know. And supposedly, like, you can go to the Guardia Civil and ask them directions or ask them for help, and they'll help you, and they're nice guys. But they're also a paramilitary police force, right? They're trained. Right. They're military trained. Some of them are even, you know, to the point of being jump trained, like they're trained to do, you know, commando operations. I mean, they're basically the military.
Right.
So, anyway, there was a, these American agents were supposed to break into a gendarmerie facility and steal a cache of weapons, okay? So the Belgian commandos helped them do this, and they, it had kind of gone pear-shaped on them, and the Americans apparently were a little too forceful in trying to carry out the operation a little too realistically. So they called the mission off, right? So what happened is there's this one paracommando commander. He was retired, and I guess they talked about it in the video. He was retired, and they kind of convinced him to come back to help out, right? And so he's driving these guys around, and they say, okay, well, just in case the mission, you know, is okay to go, why don't you just leave us at this corner, and then we'll take care of the rest. So he drops them off at the corner, and apparently they broke into the gendarmerie facility. They threw a hand grenade into the assistant director of the gendarmerie facility's office and blew it up. They shot a guard, and then they stole a whole, you know, like carload of guns. Okay.
Right.
Somehow these guns magically got into the hands of a fascist organization that carried out something like a 5-year reign of terror. And these guys would dress up in full body armor, very well supplied, right? Military trained by us and by the rest of NATO. They had entire schools. I mean, if you've ever heard of the schools of the Americas, that's where, like, we train like insurgents in Central America and in Cuba how to fight their, you know, their evil communist governments. Well, these guys would do such, I don't remember the name offhand, but these guys would do such lovely things as they walked into a supermarket, right, and just started indiscriminately opening fire, just shooting people as they walked down the aisles. They killed like 30 people, walked away, never found, never prosecuted. The gendarmerie covered it up, obfuscated the search for evidence, outright lied, prevented any kind of investigation from taking place. Investigations that should have been done by the gendarmerie, they just sat on it and forgot all about it. And all that was designed to create what's called the strategy of tension to scare the people in Belgium into wanting a fascist government to step in and protect them.
Man, that is
it's a lot to swallow.
it is. You're right. I mean, just to, like I said, just to really even think that, that, you know, this is going on, and like I say again, not a theory.
No.
You know, it's been exposed. It just
honestly
just scares the crap out of you.
Well, I mean, it should completely scare the crap out of you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, this is something. I mean, and really, it makes you, you know, it makes you think, you know, about, you know, even recent, you know, recent things. I mean, really, who's behind it then? You know, was it done to, you know, for other reasons? I mean, you know, was this operation, you know, done in order to create, you know, a reason to do something else?
Mm-hmm. And the thing you have to remember, right, is that these guys, they're fighting for an ideology. So just as many Americans are afraid that some Islamic militant group is going to set off a dirty bomb and kill themselves in the process, I might add, in some big city somewhere, right? These guys are just as willing to carry it out. They are in it to the death. And when you listen to Vincenzo Vinicacuera talk about what he did, he's completely unrepentant. He's sad that he got caught. He's sad that he didn't kill more people when he set off the bomb in Plaza Fontana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he didn't achieve his objective.
And now let me, we got quite a few other people kind of joining us in the chat room there. And just to let everyone know, we are speaking with Olaf Phillips. It is actually, our very own conspiracy researcher. And we're talking about Operation Gladio, which we're referring to as just Gladio. Very interesting topic here, a little bit of something scary. So, you know, thanks for those who are tuning in, if you're just now tuning in. And by the way, if you want to join us in the chat room, you can just sign up for a free account right here on Blog Talk Radio and join us, ask some questions. So, for those in the chat room, if you have any questions, please just type them in, or you can call 718-508-9887, which I know a lot of us still looking for some call-ins on his shows.
Now, one thing I did want to point out is everybody was probably wondering what Gladio means, and Gladio is a gladiator. It's a Roman gladiator. These are the guys that fought in gladiatorial matches. They carried something called a gladius, which is a special kind of sword that was designed for gladiator matches. So they're euphemistically referred to as gladiators in the nomenclature of this operation.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I figured everybody should at least know where it comes from, right?
Yeah, and so then, yeah, it does make sense there. Well, so what about, okay, you know, I mentioned recent events. What are some recent events that to you would say that it's very possible that, you know, Gladio was behind it, or, you know, something similar to that?
Well, in more recent years, things that are documented are situations where the Turkish division of Gladio openly fought the Kurds. They would go in and mass slaughter Kurds. That's an ethnic group that's in, I believe it's in northern Iraq along the Turkish border. And they're in a disputed area where the Turks claim that that's Turkish land and the Iraqis claim that that's Iraqi land. They're also a huge unknown in the battle for what we call Iraq, which is actually not really a country, but they occupy Kurdistan, and they, you know, basically don't want anybody to mess with them. Now, the problem with something like Gladio existing or Gladio operating is that the possibilities are too vast, right? Mm-hmm. At this point, with something like Gladio in operation, and this is something that nobody will talk about. This is something that anybody who's remotely involved with Gladio or even has heard of Gladio or has dealt with Gladio in any capacity will not talk about them because they're very dangerous. And that's why, you know, I'm going on stuff that's publicly known. I am not going to dig into this and go try to uncover what Gladio is called now. I don't want to ever meet somebody from Gladio. You know, I am afraid of Gladio. Because they don't care. I'm just saying these guys exist and this is what they've done. And with something as vast as Gladio, I mean, you know, you basically have, back in the 80s and the 90s, right, we had a lot of stories of black helicopters and UN concentration camps and things that didn't necessarily exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what Gladio represents is somebody's private army who can be called out at a moment's notice to do whatever the hell they want. So any kind of terrorist operation, whether it was blamed on ETA, the Baath separatists, or it was blamed on the IRA, it was blamed on Islamic militants, Gladio puts all of that into doubt. You can't say that the coal was bombed by Islamic militants now. Was it? Maybe. Was it sponsored by bin Laden? Maybe. Or it could have been a false flag operation under Gladio.
Right.
That is the biggest problem of all. Because where Al-Qaeda, frankly, doesn't have the planning capabilities, the people capabilities, or the operational capabilities to carry out some of these complex operations, Gladio sure does. Gladio absolutely has the capabilities, the time, and the inclination to do it.
I'm just sitting there thinking of just some, you know, path, just like, say, the coal. I mean, you know, it makes you wonder, really, who was behind it.
It opens up everything. And not just to Americans. It opens up everything to everybody.
Right. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It's a hornet's nest.
Yeah.
You know, they always say, like, if you have a cop who went rogue on you, right, and he or she is, you know, planting evidence and violating people's rights and, you know, doing these things, now they have to go back through every single one of their convictions to make sure that the evidence was real, that the, you know, it was a good arrest, these people actually did what they're, you know, accused of doing, yada yada yada. Well, with Gladio, you now have the same exact problem. You have to go back to every event. You have to make sure that it really was fill-in-the-blank terrorist organization that carried it out.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not even the worst part of all. See, Gladio's the sword, right? But
mm-hmm.
who's pulling the puppet strings? That's the bigger problem. Who controls Gladio?
Right.
Ostensibly, it's NATO, but we've seen through, you know, copious amounts of I've got a piece of paper that has a 40-year history of Gladio, right? And it's pretty obvious that NATO, as an organization, couldn't have told these guys to carry out these operations. It goes against everything that NATO is. Some of them were joint CIA operations, some of them were MI6, you know, but really, you know, who's pulling the strings?
Yeah.
And that gets to the bigger problem. It's something that I call the strategy of terror. And that, it's built around something that's called game theory. And in game theory, the basic premise of game theory is that humans are inherently selfish. And given a circumstance where they are put at risk or they see a way to get ahead, they will absolutely, positively do whatever it takes to better their own self-interest, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you use game theory, right, and you combine it with the strategy of tension, you have the strategy of terror. You create terror in a populace, whether it was the Soviet Union in the Cold War, us with the Islamic militants, England with the IRA, Spain with, you know, with the Basque separatists, ETA, Shining Path in Peru, I mean, you know, Red Brigade in Italy, it goes on and on and on, right? You know, you use these organizations and call them the bad guy. Even us calling the Soviet Union the bad guy in the Cold War, I mean, I don't know about you, but unfortunately I grew up in an era when they were seen as the evil guys. They were the, you know, the architects of evil. You know, I forget what Reagan used to call them, but they were like the axis of evil, the ultimate bad guy. These evil bastards that live, you know, in the Soviet Union. When in reality, I know plenty of people who are Russian, Ukrainian, nice people, great people, fed the same line of BS as we were. You know, you can sit down, have a beer with them, great guys. You know. They'll tell you all about all the BS that they were fed, the propaganda. You can tell them about the propaganda you were fed, and it all sounds the same. But the idea is that you use the bad guy to instill terror on the populace to further your mean or your objective, which could be Star Wars, or it could be warrantless wiretapping, or it could be, you know, Guantanamo Bay, whatever you want. You use these guys to create this terror that we all feel. I'm no different, right? But you get this terror sensation. Then under game theory, you're going to do whatever you have to do to protect yourself, and then protect your family, and then protect your friends, and then protect your country. Which is, you give up your rights, you give up your guns, you give whatever it is that somebody wants to take away from you that is really important to you. The strategy of terror creates it's like the perfect storm to justify these events. And then the ultimate goal of the strategy of terror is to create a one-world government.
Right.
Because we start to see it, you can see it with the economy today, right? you're no longer hearing about just Ben Bernanke and Henry Paulson going, God, you know, our economy's in the crapper. What are we going to do to save the U.S.? They're now meeting with the heads of the central banks in, you know, Canada and in Europe and Australia and Japan, and they're all creating a one-world economic policy because the collapse of the dollar, the collapse of the euro, the collapse of the yen, you know, these things created the perfect storm where the traders are in terror. They won't extend, the banks won't extend credit. Everybody's afraid. My house has lost value. You know, your listeners' houses have lost value. We pay too much at the gas pump. And it's now a worldwide problem, right? So they step in and they say, we've got a worldwide solution. And then they can isolate these quote-unquote organizations exterior to the country and then eradicate them systematically. And then they have what they ultimately wanted, which is a one-world government. Then they can step in and start to say, okay, there are not too many people here. They can create another terror operation, you know, slaughter 3.5 billion people, get it down to 500 million. They're in their comfort zone. You can do the rest of the math.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're seeing in Gladio is soldiers, is the puppet master.
Mm-hmm. Well, Love, we got about 4 minutes before we take a break. So what I want to do is actually, well, about 3 minutes. Before we start getting into that, because I really want to dig a little deeper in some recent events, you know, the whole economic crisis, you know, because these are things definitely, you know, on people's minds and they're, you know, kind of making a tie into it. So we can dig a little deeper in that. Well, let's go ahead and take a break.
Well, one thing I want to add before you take the break, because I want your listeners to think about this. Is that Gladio as an entity was, its purpose was to install fascist governments. That is what their clear purpose was, and everything that you can read about them, there's a book that a professor in Switzerland wrote. There's the Wikipedia. There's plenty of other websites that talk about it. Gladio as an entity was designed to install fascist governments to control the population, right? In effect, create fascist states. But they can also be leveraged in other ways because members of Gladio, you don't know who they are. They could be bankers. They could be your brother. You have no idea who these guys are. So they can be activated in any way, shape, or form. As long as it meets their agenda, they will do it. Okay.
All right, you ready to take a break then?
Yes.
All right, well... Excuse me, everyone there. Well, we're going to take a quick little break, about five and a half minutes like we always do, just kind of, you know, stretch a little bit. So all those out there tuning in, don't go anywhere because we're going to dig a little deeper in this and just see exactly how it kind of connects to what's going on currently in the world. I mean, I'm sure the, you know, economic crisis is on everybody's minds. I mean, just like Olaf said there, the, you know, value of the house going down. I mean, you know, businesses are being hit too. People are being asked to cut their hours back, take days off, you know, just where I'm at. Other businesses are starting to do layoffs. So, you know, this is, it's hitting home for everybody. It's something that's everybody's mind. So we're going to dig a little bit deeper in that as soon as we come back. So don't go anywhere. Back in just a moment.
Visit www.shadowsinthedarkradio.com today to sign up for our free newsletter, join as a member of our forum, or browse our online store where you can find books, CDs, and DVDs, like a signed copy of The President's Vampire by Robert Damon Schneck, or the complete works of Dr. Gary Frick for only $20. That's four books signed by Dr. Frick that carry a great message. You also find downloadable products like Mysteries Magazine and the Donald Kehoe interviews, DVDs featuring Charlie Carlson and Mr. Lobo. So go to www.shadowsinthedarkradio.com today and be a part of the show.
All right, everyone, we are back, and you are tuned in to Shadows in the Dark, broadcasting live right here on Blog Talk Radio. Also syndicated on Black Vault Radio Network at blackvaultradio.com, ParaX at para-x.com, and soon to be on Planet Paranormal at planetparanormal.com. Well, everyone, we are talking about Operation Gladio tonight, along with our special guest and conspiracy researcher, Olaf Phillips. So, Olav, let's kind of continue on and talk about some recent events and connect some of the dots.
Well, the one thing that I did want to address, I was looking in the chat room, and the one person said, if you can't trust your government, who can you trust? Well, that's a damn good question, and I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, very true. Well, and I think, you know, someone else made the comment, I guess, you know, we might as well get into it, about 9/11 and saying, didn't bin Laden first deny that he had anything to do with it?
That part I don't know, but what I can tell you is that Al-Qaeda as an entity doesn't really exist. I mean, we hear about Al-Qaeda as this master terrorist organization that is able to work wonders and blow up anything and hit anybody anywhere, and this basically is not the case. Al-Qaeda, the name Al-Qaeda was actually created by the CIA, and I forget what exactly it means, but it's like the pillar, it means like the pillar. And that's the kind of designation that the CIA gave to bin Laden when they were funding him in his struggle against the Russians in Afghanistan. But as an organization, it is two people. It is Osama bin Laden and Abraham al-Zahiri. Everybody else is kind of you might think of bin Laden, I think, as more of a venture capitalist of terror. He gives money to organizations to carry out operations. He doesn't actually plan them. He kind of finances them sometimes. And one of the most interesting things about Al-Qaeda that I've ever heard, and I think it's patently hilarious, is that, you know, in forging the strategy of terror, right, everybody is linked to Al-Qaeda. So they say, ETA is linked to Al-Qaeda, you know, the IRA is linked to Al-Qaeda. Well, I thought Al-Qaeda was a militant Islamic organization. The IRA is a group of people from Northern Ireland, now, by the way, you know, legitimized. Sinn Féin, their political division, is part of the Northern Irish government, you know. But the IRA was basically just trying to get the English out of Northern Ireland. That's it. You know, and the IRA had a long history of bombing police stations and various things. And when the IRA would bomb something, they would call the police station up about an hour ahead of time and say, we're going to blow you up in about an hour. Everybody should leave. If you don't leave, you're going to die. That's what the IRA did. I don't know how you can link the IRA to an Islamic militant organization or ETA. ETA is there's a Basque region. It's a very beautiful area, very beautiful culture, great food, interesting language, but it's a small, rocky, mountainous region between Spain and France, and it's like the along the Iberian Peninsula. It's a very thin, mountainous region that separates the two. Well, the people that live there are the Basque. There's a group of people that don't really want the Spaniards to control them, or the French. They just kind of want to be left alone and do their own thing. So they created something called ETA. ETA blows up, police stations and does things to try to convince the Spaniards to leave, and tries to convince the, the French that they don't really want them there, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how you can link them to an Islamic militant organization. The best documentaries you could ever watch, they're made by a guy named Adam Curtis. They're BBC documentaries, and he has one about the rise of neoconservatism as it relates to the rise of militant Islamicism as well. And you know, he goes into this one incident where there's a very famous video, and it was tromped around quite a bit after 9/11. It shows bin Laden walking down a road, and he's surrounded by, I think, you know, 8 or 10 guys in balaclavas and ski masks carrying AK-47s, and they all have, you know, camouflage on. And it's like, look, this is his own personal bodyguard. Well, actually, in reality, what that was is that they were students at a terrorist training camp down the road from where bin Laden was living, and bin Laden wanted to have a show of force for one of his many videos that he makes, and he hired them for the day. He said, okay guys, I'll pay you you know, like $100 each to kind of follow me around while we shoot the video. I'm too cheap, so you have to supply your own balaclavas, a ski mask. You have to supply your own camouflage, and you have to supply your own personal AK-47. And for $100, you can follow me around and look mean. And then we'll make a video, and everybody will be afraid. This is what Al-Qaeda is. Al-Qaeda is not a massive network. It's two guys in a cave somewhere in Afghanistan that are probably going to die, you know, in the next 6 months. Because no matter who you put into office, whether it's McCain or, you know, Obama, I think both of them, you know, they, one of their campaign promises is that they're going to find the guy and finally kill him. But when you do succeed in doing that, it's not going to stop terrorism. You know, I mean, they're, you know, they've been blowing up planes and taking over boats, you know, for 30 years. I mean, just killing bin Laden is not going to stop anything.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. Now, like I said, some of the you know, recent events and you know, of course, 9/11. I mean, it definitely fits into exactly what you're saying about Gladio. I mean, you know, starting with 9/11. Well, I mean, it installed fear.
Absolutely.
It, you know, we were losing rights. Lost rights. Wow. Not losing. I mean, you know, lost rights. And you know, I mean, when the, you know, talk of going, you know, to war with Hussein and searching bin Laden, well, the vast majority of the nation was behind it. They were ready to go kill.
Me too. I'm no different. You know, I may be a conspiracy guy, but, you know, in the hours and the days and the months after 9/11 occurred, you know, the idea that it was a conspiracy didn't even dawn on me. I'm like many people, you know, I took it for what it was worth. It was like, you know, Pearl Harbor. But, you know, it's been 7 years. I mean, we're still no further, you know, toward finding who actually perpetrated it, because you won't.
Right.
You'll never find these guys. They're not who you think they are. And you know, the thing that started me down that track is that you start to look at the events of 9/11. You know, listen to the NORAD tapes. I know there's a lot of them, but listen to them. You know, these guys, the FAA is calling in the NORAD. We've got hijackings. We think that they're gonna do something. You need to send some planes up to protect us. And NORAD's like, are you sure this is real? You know, we're having a drill for this very thing. Is this a drill, or are you really kind of concerned? You know, and then the idea that they called in a Langley Air Force Base, which runs the air cover for the Pentagon and the White House, that said, you know, NORAD calls in and says, hey guys, we've got some planes that are inbound your direction. You better freaking stop them. And the guy from Langley comes back and says, I'm not launching nothing. You guys are on your own. I mean, this is paramount to, you know, the treason.
Right.
Like, you've been ordered to launch, you're not going to launch. You know, if you were in a missile silo, there's that famous beginning of War Games, right? The two guys are in the missile silo and they're cranking the keys, and the guy's like, I just want to make sure that this is a real launch order. The guy says, turn your key, and he shoots them, which is actually what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a total breakdown of military chain of command and process, you know. And it goes on from there. So the whole events of 9/11, one of the terrorists who supposedly hijacked the planes, you know, he's alive and well in, like, Israel somewhere. You know, they put him up as one of the 10 most wanted. They're like, this guy was a hijacker. He's like, wait a minute, I'm alive. I'm not a part of any organization. I'm a student. Leave me out of it, you know.
Yeah.
And the fear that we created ourselves as a country, we're going to get the motherfuckers, whatever, you know. The fear that we created, I mean, it even, that strategy of terror even went beyond our boundaries, you know. I remember I was actually in the Channel Islands, the little island chain between England and France in the English Channel, and I was out there doing some work. And when they had the bombings in Madrid, they bombed all the trains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember watching that on Sky News, and the first thing that popped into my head was, oh, this is so sad. The second thing is, oh, my God, I'm stuck on this 2-mile by 1-mile island. I'm going to be here forever, you know?
Right.
But within an hour, Etta, who would be the most likely suspect for setting off those bombs, Etta called in to the largest news organization in Spain and said, hey, it wasn't us. Don't come after us. We have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. You know, so even the terrorist organizations are scared. I mean, that's really it. But, you know, there are just so many, you know, there's so many things about 9/11 that make no sense, like the you know, the magic passport. It's like when you talk about Kennedy, you talk about the magic bullet, the one that fell out of his body and was like perfect condition, you know, the groove marks were totally clear, and it looks like it had never been fired into anything. Well, you have the same thing, you know. You have a 757. I mean, it's a big plane, guys. We've all flown in one, okay? This thing plows into a building, creates ostensibly so much heat that it collapses the building, and like three of the terrorist passports just happen to survive without being incinerated and gently float down to the ground and are picked up clean, no concrete dust, no nothing. Some dude just picks them up. It's like, oh, who's this? Looks like a Saudi to me.
Right.
There's so many problems with it. But the one thing that, it's still a really nasty conversation to have. You know, most people, you try to have that conversation with them, and, you know, you get the Bill Maher thing. Get the hell out of my studio, you bastards, you know. It's a divisive topic because people don't want to believe that we could kill 3,000 of our own people, although we've done it again and again and again. I mean, this is nothing new for us. We've done this many times. But it's a very divisive topic, and one of the things I always point to is that, well, you know, Al-Qaeda has the planning, the organization, and the financing to carry it out, which genuinely they don't. They haven't done it since. There's no indication they ever will. It's like a one-shot deal. Well, you look at Gladio. Gladio opens up the whole picture, and you say, okay, well, look, these guys have the planning capabilities. They're military trained. They have the ideology to carry it out. They will do it. They have the money, they have the equipment, they have the access. I mean, if it were a Gladio operation, right, you know, you're not talking about guys with box cutters. You're talking about guys with guns. I mean, if they took over a plane, they have the connections to get the guns on board the plane. You know? And you know, as an American, as a red-blooded American, you know, I just have a lot of problems thinking to myself, you've got 150 people on a plane. You've got four guys with box cutters. You think that 150 people can overpower four guys with box cutters?
All right.
I mean, ask yourself that objectively. They know they're going to die. Well, what the fuck's the difference? It's like the guys on United 73, right? Let's roll. Let's take them out. That's the go American spirit. That would have happened on every fucking plane. This is not, nobody, red-blooded American's going to sit by and let themselves be turned into a weapon.
Don't forget, we're rated everyone on this show.
Oh, sorry. It's, you know, it's a very emotional thing for me. But
I can tell. Yeah, definitely.
You know what? Even if the guy cut me from, you know, from stem to stern, you know, I'd at least die trying to take him out.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if I was on a plane and there was only four, even there was four people box cutters, there was 150, I think enough people would definitely, you know, stand up and do something. I mean, I'll go at them. I mean, shoot, I mean, like I say, it may cut me limb to limb, but I'll guarantee I'll knock them down for somebody else.
It takes one to start a chain reaction.
Exactly.
So there are a lot of problems with it, you know, and then there's the whole idea that these guys were making phone calls on their cell phones from a jumbo jet at like 25,000 feet. You know, I hate to break it to everybody, but you can use a cell phone in a plane. It is good to about 10,000 feet, and then it stops. You can't use it over 10,000 feet. And quite commonly, you know, private pilots, if their radios go out, they will call the control tower to tell them on their cell phone, because they fly at like 3,000, 4,000 feet. They'll call into the control tower, say, hey, my radio's out. What do you want me to do? I have to declare an emergency and my radio's out. You know, I want to get the plane down, or I want to go back. You know, tell me what to do. They'll do this on their cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that at 25,000 feet. It just won't work. So how did they do it? Some of them made phone calls from the, you know, from the cell phones that are embedded in the seats in front of you. Some of them did do that, but the official story is that they called on their cell phones.
Right.
You know, it's other things too. Like, I hate to tell everybody, but the Pentagon is a highly secure facility. And whether you know this or not, the White House and the Pentagon are completely ringed by anti-aircraft missiles with orders to shoot down whatever comes near them. So you've got a whole buttload of people who are asleep at the switch and watched a huge plane fly into the Pentagon without firing a missile.
Right,
I'm not making this stuff up.
Right, I mean, and surely, like I said, I mean, they knew that it was heading in that direction.
They had plenty of advance warning. They knew those things have transponders. They knew, you know, okay, just so everybody knows, right, if you really want to track an airplane, you want to have a little bit of fun, there's a website called flightaware.com, and you can actually go there, and you can type in the tail number, and you can watch the plane fly across the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have transponders. You know exactly where they are, what altitude they're at, what kind of plane it is. I mean, everything is there for you to see.
Right.
You know, the idea that we didn't know where these planes went that's just patently untrue. We knew exactly where they were. And conventional wisdom is you send up some F-15s or F-16s to go shoot them down, if that's what it comes to.
Right. Well, okay, let's kind of, start moving up a little bit. Because to me, I really think all this kind of falls in behind the other. So, you know, we end up going to war, with Iraq to, you know, get Hussein. And, of course, we're looking for bin Laden at the same time. You know, and all this taking place over
in Iraq.
Right. And, you know, so... we've got the fear installed into not just the American people, but everyone. You know, global fear. I mean, two planes just rammed into two towers, you know, killing thousands. I mean, this is something everybody has to, you know, fear.
And remember, Al-Qaeda is a buzzword for terror. It goes beyond anything that's happened to us. I mean, we're very... ethnocentric. We think the world revolves around America. Newsflash, guys, it doesn't. But you go to Russia, right? And they have a similar problem. They have a area called Chechnya. They have Islamic militants in Chechnya who claim to be part of Al Qaeda. These guys, you know, carry out operations all the time. They blow up Aeroflot planes. They assassinate people. You know, so the Russians have their own, you know, Al-Qaeda band that's attacking them, and it's the Chechens. So, I mean, it's a worldwide problem. That's why it's so plain to me that you look at this, and whatever Gladio has become now, they're like the foot soldiers to something bigger. And there's a whole other thing that I haven't even touched on, is that how the financing of Gladio was done. There obviously was the links to NATO countries, right? We supplied gold, the French supplied gold, the Spaniards supplied gold, everybody supplied money and guns. But to export the revolution, they were actually funded by the Vatican Bank. The whole BCCI scandal, where the Vatican was pouring billions of dollars through BCCI into these BCCI branches all over the world they were using it to fight the communists. Those were Gladio operations, everybody, and they were controlled by an outfit called P2, Propaganda Due. It is the first, last, and only Vatican-sanctioned Masonic lodge. And the guy who ran BCCI, who had tons and tons of documents, was ready to come forward, wanted everybody to know that he wasn't, you know, an evil guy, that he was doing what he was ordered, was found hanging under Blackfriars Bridge in London, in a very ritualistic method. He's hanging upside down. His arm is bent at a certain angle. It was a ritualistic murder. And they claim that that was a suicide. So the Vatican financed Gladio operation through BCCI, through P2, And the members of P2 run the gambit. It's like the who's who of the Gladio operation in Europe. These guys were ultra well connected. And you look, I mean, they carried out coup d'etats, they carried out assassinations all over the world. I mean, they did it in Africa, they did it, you know, in Central America, they did it in Europe, they did it in the Middle East. You know, this is not confined to any specific geographical zone.
Right. For all those, we got a few more new ones in the chat room there. We're talking with Olaf Phillips tonight about Operation Gladio. Now, you know, like I said, we'll kind of, you know, walk ourselves up to the present time here, just kind of connect on the dots, especially in regards to Gladio. So, of course, you know, like I say, we're in the Middle East. You know, we find Hussein pretty quickly, but still, for some reason, can't find this one bin Laden guy. You know, and it just dragging on. And then, you know, of course, the housing market starts to, you know, to go downhill and seems to set off a little bit of a chain reaction. So now we're exactly worldwide. So now, you know, we're kind of in this, not kind of, we are, you know, in an economic crisis. And, you know, mentioned earlier right there before we went to the break, you know, people losing jobs, people having to cut back hours. Their you know, company they work for is saying, sorry, you're going to have to cut back your hours, or it's either that or you're going to get laid off. You know, businesses are struggling, the housing market's struggling, house values are going down, Wall Street is plummets, takes a great jump back up, and then plummets again. I mean, it's just, it's chaos.
Exactly. That's the point. Because mm-hmm. It creates terror. See, the thing about, it's called asymmetric warfare. The thing about asymmetric warfare is that you think that warfare is completely defined as a field engagement where you have two vast armies that beat the crap out of each other on a huge field, and they have tanks and airplanes and helicopters and automatic weapons, and they follow rules of the Geneva Conventions and rules of battle, you know. But I think it was von Clausewitz said that war is the ultimate extension of politics. You know, the war is just another political arena. So, you know, asymmetric warfare dictates that you can expand the war beyond simply a one person, one gun shooting at another person with one gun engagement. It can be economic warfare. It can be, you know, cyber war. It can be all sorts of different kinds of war, many of which are subversive, right? You know, you've got some guy, you think a terrorist operation is to go in and say, you know, blow up, like in Iraq, they blow up some of the terminals, right, to slow down oil production. But in reality, in asymmetric warfare, all it takes is one employee who's co-opted to turn a crank and to close a valve to decrease the amount of oil that passes through the terminal. You don't actually have to blow it up. You know, you can actually just disable portions of it or just slow it down. That's asymmetric warfare. So the idea that the housing crisis and the economic crisis that we see worldwide is, you know, is an extrapolation of a Gladio operation. It's completely within the paradigm. You know, if you watch the video, it's kind of funny. The paracommando, who I referred to earlier, I think it's in the second video, he's actually a banker. He was a commander. He had retired from the paracommando in Belgium, and he became a banker. So the people that are members of these organizations, they're all around you. You don't know who they are. They could be your bankers. They could be on Wall Street. It just takes one guy flicking one lever in a slightly wrong way, and he knows that he's set. Nothing's going to happen to him. Mm-hmm. But even if it does, he doesn't care, because it furthers an ideological agenda. So the idea that they could create a cascade to get what you see today is completely beyond the pale.
Now, someone's asking in the chat, I know, you know, you kind of touched on it earlier about, you know, who's, you know, behind Gladio, and they're asking, do you have any ideas, any thoughts on, you know, the mind behind Gladio.
Well, that's really where it becomes like shrouded in mystery. This is the age-old
right.
argument. You know, who is the quote-unquote Illuminati?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the puppet masters? I mean, you don't know. There's no way to tell. I mean, you know, you see, the problem with the concept of the Illuminati, for example, is that you see you see elements of it, right? So you'll see, say, the Bilderberg, and that's one element of it. Or you'll see, like, politicians, that's another element of it, right? But you never
right.
you never see the, it's like the Wizard of Oz. You never see the wizard. You only
right.
see what the wizard's done. So to know exactly who the wizard is, you can never know. So to me, I say they're part of the, you know, the quote-unquote Illuminati, whoever that is. That's who I think is behind it ultimately. And they use these various organizations as their foot soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in World War II, right? There is an organization in the German army, in the SS called the Onanerbe. The SS were definitively occultist. Everything they did was occultist. They just bled occultism. So why would they look for Christian artifacts like the Holy Grail or the Ark of the Covenant or any of the, you know, Spear of Destiny, any of this stuff? Who told them to go and do it? Who told Himmler to tell them to go and do it? See, you always see the foot soldier. You never see the general. The general is hidden in some bunker somewhere, and you can never know who they are. So all you can do is you can say, well, this looks like it's an Illuminati operation. So whoever the Illuminati is, deep in their ivory tower or wherever the hell that is, you know, the Committee of 300, I think is what John Coleman calls them, you know, wherever they are, they're the ones pulling the strings. Then they hand down the order to the next tier of the pyramid, which is the Bilderbergers or the Committee of 300 or the, you know, the Club of Rome or the CFR, the Masons, whoever you want to blame, they're the next tier, so they get the orders.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know who they get the orders from. It's a completely closed, isolated setup. You know, it's the kind of thing where your orders come in a sealed box. You don't know where it has no return address. You just know that it came in a sealed box and that you're supposed to do it. If you do it, you know, dreams of wealth and avarice beyond your imagination will be bestowed upon you. But if you don't do it, you'll die. You know, all these
right.
organizations are elements of the bigger organization, but they have no direct link to the bigger organization. That's why it's a pyramid.
Mm-hmm. Now, so, you know, right now, like I say, kind of in this economic crisis, kind of mentioned to, you know, where it's kind of headed. So let's just kind of go back over that on what you think is going to kind of happen exactly from what you're seeing now.
Okay, well, to make it simple, let's use the Georgia Guidestones, my favorite
of course.
Topic. Let's use them as kind of a blueprint, right? One of the things that it spells out is to create a one-world banking system. By engineering an economic collapse across the entire world, the only way that you can ensure stability is to unify all the central banks around the world so they speak with one economic policy, okay? The next step is to say, okay, well, now that all the central banks are functioning as one autonomous entity instead of, I don't know, 20 autonomous entities, so let's just make it one autonomous entity. So you take all the central banks, you unify it into the World Monetary Fund, the Global Superbank, whatever you want to call them. This Global Superbank oversees all economic policy for the entire planet, at least the organized, industrialized planet. I think ultimately what you'd see happening is these non-industrial countries, you know, like in Africa or in South America, Central America, in Asia, you know, that I think ultimately under that kind of a model, they would become worker states where they're just industrial output. They're just people are born, live, and die in a factory kind of deal, right? So
mm-hmm.
you collapse all the economies to push them into one unified economy. Once you have one unified economy where the dollar is a universal currency across the entire globe, then you've established the One World Bank, which is one of the tenets of the New World Order, if you believe in that.
Right.
So collapsing all the economies around the world and using greed as a mechanism to do that makes perfect sense. Because you would unify all the banks into a singular entity. And once you have the singular entity, then control of the singular entity is very simple. You know, and we all use the same money. You know, we may go to, say, Bank of America or Wells Fargo, or in England, NatWest or Barclays, Royal Bank of Scotland, or, you know, wherever your favorite bank is, right? You may go to that bank, but that bank gets its marching, in reality, that bank gets its marching orders from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is our central bank. Well, if you have one central bank for the entire world, all of those banks get their marching orders from this one central bank that kind of runs the global economy. And they can say, you know, Asia is too rich right now. We're going to jack up inflation in Asia to bring their standard of living down to be equitable with the rest of the world. So they can play, you know, monetary games to stabilize the entire world. So we basically all live at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
I know, it's pretty vast.
Yeah, it is.
The scope of this kind of stuff is beyond, you know, it's beyond school board elections, it's beyond the United States, it's beyond North America, it's beyond the Americas, it's universal. As we see it, it's universal.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, with what's going on right now, you can definitely, I mean, it's not something that's hard to see that you know, it's creating a crisis all over the place.
Oh, yeah, and the thing that I find kind of amusing is that, you know, here are these bankers in America. They bundle these bad mortgages. They know they're bad. It's like the junk bonds of the 80s, you know. And they package them up. They know what they're doing is wrong. They do it anyway. Our economy takes a dive. The English, you know, I lived over there for a period of time, so I'm always curious about what the English do, because, you know, if we get a cold, they sneeze. That's kind of the saying. You know, they think they watch our economy tank, and they're like, well, we better do that too. I mean, if you're a banker and you watch somebody make a mistake, why would you make the same mistake? I mean, think about yourself at work, right? Whatever you do, if you're a mechanic or a teacher, or an IT person, whatever you do, if you look at your coworker and your coworker screws up royally, are you going to do exactly what they did so that you can screw up too? No, you're going to learn.
No.
These guys didn't learn. They did literally exactly what we did. Exactly what we did.
Now, there's a comment in the chat room saying, if it's beyond belief, maybe we shouldn't believe it. Could that be the point?
Okay, if it's beyond belief and maybe you shouldn't believe it, then don't. Don't believe anything that I've said.
Well, you know, and saying, though, you know, could that be, you know, the point? I mean, that it's so far beyond belief that really nobody's going to look at it. I mean, not nobody, but the majority of the people won't look at it and say, oh, well, we're just in a crisis and we're going to come out of it and that's it.
Right. You know, the best thing to do is to hide in plain sight. I mean,
right.
I don't think it's so beyond belief that it was engineered that way just to make us not believe it. I think it's just so beyond anything that we as normal individuals and citizens can comprehend that it's just so vast. You know, it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about it. I don't think that it was intended to be that way. I think that it just ended up being that way. I don't think that the intent was to make something that's so beyond belief that, you know, we can't understand it. I think that it just organically became that.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that they did this whole thing to make it so beyond belief that we that we'd be so dumbfounded. I think that you're just talking about something with so much scale, the magnitude of something that's so vast, that it just is beyond belief. I mean, I have trouble reconciling it myself. I mean, I've got a little boy, I lay there at night and I think to myself, my God, you know, am I going to have a job tomorrow? You know, I'm as worried as everybody else.
Right.
So, it does serve to, how should I put it? It does serve to placate us, to stop us from trying to do anything, because it's so vast that we can't really comprehend the magnitude of it. You know, it does do that, but I don't think they set out to do that. I think that when you're playing marbles on a world scale, you know, global scale, I think that it just kind of ends up being that way. Because you have to understand, is that these things, right? Gladio is a topic. I mean, these guys are like the foot soldiers, right? But as a greater topic, since we're kind of extrapolating, as a greater topic, these guys have been, in the modern era, these guys have been planning this for well over 200 years. This is a long game. You know, in the con world, this would be, you know, a long con. I mean, this is what you spend decades preparing for. Well, they spent centuries preparing for this thing. This is something that has been planned and carried out on a global level for millennia, you know. This is not something that somebody cooked up overnight and said, well, I'm part of this Illuminati Adam Weishaupt thing. I'm going to, you know, tomorrow I'm going to wake up and scare the crap out of everybody, take all their rights, and then centralize the bank. And once I control the money, I'm going to centralize the military. Once I control the guns, I'm going to centralize the government. You don't just wake up and, you know, assert world domination. I mean, you do it over time. This is a long story. There's no one person that's, you know, maybe Bush accelerated parts of it, but this is not something that you can blame on one individual. You have to blame it before the United States was even created. These things were already being planned. And they had setbacks. It's like any plan. You know, you guys have jobs. You have projects, right? Whatever you do, you have a project, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, somebody's planning that project. It's like you see Microsoft project, and you see these lines of interdependencies, and, you know, maybe something goes a little long and it kind of delays the plan, or something doesn't work, so you have to rework the plan again and again and again, and over time, you know, you kind of push out your launch date, so to speak. Well, this is exactly what you're experiencing here, is that things happened, the wrong people were put into power at the wrong time, you know, things were slowed down, so they try to make time up in certain places, and ultimately the end result of which is still the same.
Uh-huh. All right,
one bank, one religion, 500 million people.
Yeah. Well, we've got a question coming from the chat room, which I believe you kind of already gave the answer. We'll ask just to make sure in case they missed it, and of course we have the delay. Depending on anybody's PC or Mac or computer, I mean, it can be 10 seconds to a minute, but, you know, how long these plans have been underway? So, and you were saying centuries, right?
Well, centuries that we know of. I mean, you know, Adam Weishaupt created the Illuminati ostensibly in 1776, a very banner year for us, in fact. But, you know, I think you could argue that the concept has gone back further than that. You know, there are some people that say it goes back well into the Middle Ages. There are some people that said that the Roman Empire was the first attempt to unify the globe under one banner. You know, they've tried several times. I mean, this is so grand. It's such a monumental shift that they have probably attempted several times to do it, and for a variety of reasons failed or didn't achieve exactly what they wanted, or in the case of the Roman Empire, you know, it started to collapse because they didn't have the structure right or whatever. So I think you could very easily make the argument that we're in the end game of something that's been planned for at least 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, and here's something I've kind of thought about myself.
Hard to believe,
and, yeah. Okay, I mean, you think about it, okay, one world government, one world bank. What is such the big downside to having those? I mean, wouldn't it be more of a way to unite the globe? You know,
sure.
Make everybody kind of one. So, is there? I mean, are we really talking about it as a downfall of humanity, or are more of a positive move in a way? I mean, it comes with so much negativity.
Well, I think that's all about the execution, right? So, you could have the ultimate utopia, right? It could be all Star Trek, and everybody loves each other, and we all have one big country that's the entire globe, and we all have a good sustainable living. You know, we all live in nice places. Some of us live in houses. Some of us live in high-rises. You know, we all have a safe job. We all know that our kids are going to be well-educated. We're going to have health care and all these things that we all worry about on a daily basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can have the ultimate utopia, and I don't think anybody would argue that that's bad. I mean, I think if you went to anybody in the chat room and you said, if I could transport you into Star Trek land, everything would be good, and everything would be good and golden. Everybody would be happy. There'd be no war, famine, plague, nothing. Everybody wants that. I mean, everybody wants that for their kids. The reality of the situation, though, is that humans, we're all kind of flawed. We're all flawed in our own ways, right?
Right.
You know, some people are alcoholics. Some people are drug addicts. Some people smoke. Some people, you know, they're sex addicts, whatever. We're all broken in some way, shape, or form. Well, that doesn't just stop at us. I mean, it keeps going up the food chain. And what you end up with is you end up with people in power who are broken like you are.
Right.
They are given to the same depression and anger and frustration that you have too. So in that kind of context, I think arguing that we would create the ultimate utopia is a flawed, broken idea. It's a broken promise because it's not achievable. Because even once you have that utopia, the ruling elite, you know, will fight amongst themselves because that's just what we do. You know, I hate to be a downer. It's kind of I try not to be. You know, I want to be kind of upbeat about conspiracies. I try to make them fun because it makes it kind of opens it up.
Sorry, that just make a conspiracy fun. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, you can. You can make humor out of it. I mean,
yeah.
Roger Belzer is a classic example of making humor out of conspiracies. But the reality of the situation is that it's kind of a downer. You know.
Yeah.
If you go down that path, those people, they don't care about you. They don't care about your kids. They don't care about your retirement. They don't care about anything about you. You are a number, and that number is a piece of a cog in a piece of a wheel and a piece of a machine.
Mm-hmm.
All you are to them is a productivity number.
Right.
You know, you as an individual cease to exist. I think it's more of an exploitive model than a utopian one.
All right. Well, we've got a question from the chat room, so let's get this one in from TRF saying, "Okay, if it's been planned for 2,000 years, why did they allow the United States to become constituted in 1776 in the first place?"
Well, who wrote the Constitution? See, you have to understand is that like any plan, right? It morphs over time. Okay. So you figure out over time by making mistakes and passing it on from generation to generation that certain things work and some things don't, right? So you take the Romans, for example, right? They had after they conquered you in a very bloody fashion, they had this concept where they created a universal state religion. I'm just going to use religion because it's the most divisive thing of all, right?
Okay.
Catholics, you've got Protestants, you've got Muslims, you've got Buddhists, and we all kind of believe in the same generic premise that all people are nice and happy, we all want the best for our families, blah, 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 but it's a very divisive topic. The Roman answer to that was to create the Pantheon, okay? And the Pantheon worked very effectively for 1,000 years. And what the Pantheon was is they would roll into town and say, okay, we're the new Lord Masters around here. You have to provide us with taxes. We'll protect you militarily, whatever. But you have a different religion than us. Well, you can't have that religion because you're part of us now. You have to have our universal state religion. So what they would do is they'd say, okay, we have Jupiter and Zeus and, you know, all these people. They rolled in the Vikings. They attempt to conquer the Vikings. Eventually they succeeded in it. And the Vikings say, well, we worship Odin. Okay, well, Odin is the same as Zeus. So when you go into the Happy Pantheon temple, instead of praying to Zeus, just pray to Odin. It's the same thing. And so they were like, okay, well, that's a great idea, right? So they all walk into the Pantheon temple and they pray to Odin, who's actually Zeus, who's actually, you know, whoever. You get the idea, right?
Right.
What they did? Okay. That all worked famously well until this whole, like, Jesus thing comes along. The Christians don't want any part of it. They're like, well, I'm not going to pray to Odin or Zeus. You know, the emperor is not, he's not a deity. He's just a man. You know, my God is over here. Okay, I'm not going to do that. You can feed me to the lions. It creates popular uprising. Eventually, it contributes, and along with a few other things, to the downfall of the Roman Empire. Well, the people that plan this stuff go, that didn't work. Well, what are we going to do now? Oh, well, these Christian people, you know, they seem to be kind of up and coming and rising real fast. You know, let's jump on the bandwagon there. We'll make the Catholics the center of the universe. Oh, Protestant Reformation, that didn't work right. So, you know, what you're seeing is they're trying various things. And, you know, I can't even pretend to to figure out why they allowed, you know, the United States to become, you know, separated from England. I think it's probably a way to placate us because we were pissed off at the time and, you know, we didn't want to be part of England. Well, we did kind of, but not really. Like, we wanted some of the benefits, but we didn't want to be beholden to the king, and we wanted to have fair taxes and a lot of other things that you guys can all read your history books about. So they allow us to get a constitution. They allow us to get a Bill of Rights to separate us, and then it's part of a long con. They say, okay, well, you've done this now. Now, you know, we'll let you build up your power, and you can. They used us as a center of power for the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, right, we're a placated populace. We're happy to be Americans. The Canadians are nice people, but we're Americans, whatever. And then, you know, they can, over time, create things like NAFTA, and then, you know, the North American Union, and, you know, it's a slow game. So they say, okay, well, now you're no longer Americans. You're part of the North American Union. You know, eventually, now you're no longer part of the North American Union. You're part of the one world government. You know, so they're just trying different strategies to achieve this one world that they've you know, ostensibly succeeded in creating.
Right.
Does that explain it for him?
Yeah. I hope.
Wait, huh?
Well, I was going to say, I hope so. They didn't really say, so we'll see.
Wait, then they're asking. You don't think I'm right? Tell me.
Well, we got about, you know, 5 or so minutes left.
So short.
I know, it goes by quick, don't it? I mean, just bam, bam, bam. We've done a lot out there on the table. You know, a lot of stuff to think about.
Sure.
Anything that you want to make sure to get out there before, you know, we run out of time?
You know, when confronted with something so extraordinarily complex and unhappy, you know, I have a friend, he was all about changing the world, right? You know, go out and do what you can to make the world a better place. And that alone kind of puts kinks in the plan, you know? Be nice to your fellow man. That puts kinks in the plan, believe it or not. But, you know, when confronted with something so vast, you know, the big thing is do the best you can to make your life happy. You know, go to work, pay your taxes, you know, take care of your kids, you know, love your wife, love your husband, you know, do things that make your own little plot of land a paradise. and you know, do what you can to be aware, because at some point in time, these things are going to come to a head, and people who are educated and can see what's going on, you know, will play a pivotal role in stopping these things from happening. I'm not advocating we all rise up for rebellion. That won't work. These kinds of plans play to ignorance, and they play to, they're subversive. If you understand them, then they won't work. So be educated. Read books. Don't believe what the TV tells you. You know, but most of all, you know, love your family. Have a nice day. I mean, these kinds of things, you know, do a good job at work. I mean, these things kind of go against the grain. You're supposed to be unhappy. You're supposed to be terrorized. It's like, stand up, say, hey, I believe in the Bill of Rights. I don't want my rights taken away. Don't vote for people who will authorize warrantless wiretapping. You know, stand up and say Guantanamo Bay is wrong. You know, stand up for what you believe in. That's how you stop it. That's how you prevent it from happening, is that you stand up and you say, I'm an American. I don't believe in torture. I'm an American. You know, I don't believe in warrantless wiretapping. I believe in due process. You know, get a warrant. I'm guilty? Great. Get a warrant. Somebody comes to your door and says, I want to search your house. Ask them what the warrant is. Somebody tries to arrest you. They don't read you your rights. Get out of jail. You know, it's like, you know, stand up for what it is to be an American, and that's to be free. And the way you do that is to read, is to be aware of what's going on. And when you vote, you know, everybody should vote, and vote for what you believe in. You think John McCain's a way to a better life? Vote for John McCain. You think it's Obama? Vote for Obama. But vote. Because if you vote, you can stop some of these people being in power that take away your rights. That's the flaw in the system. That's the flaw that is, as individuals we can exploit, is that they put us in a place where we have a say. But most of us don't vote. Most of us don't read. Most of us go to the ballot box and we just say, well, I don't know, the three-sentence explanation on XYZ, you know, sounds good. I'll just vote for that. Don't do that. Read about it. Figure out what it is. You know, don't be afraid to write your congressman a letter and say, hey, why did you, you know, why did you support, you know, the Patriot Act? It's a total violation of my rights. If every one of you wrote a letter to your congressman and said, hey, don't support the Patriot Act, it takes away my rights, I guarantee you that you and your message would be heard. The only way you can stop it is, we're in a system, thank God, that allows us that kind of communication. So you should use it. I do it. I won't vote for somebody who took away my rights. I don't care what their party affiliation is. To me, taking, you know, allowing somebody to wiretap my phone, and I mean, look at what the NSA scandal, where these guys were listening to soldiers in Iraq talking to their wives and their husbands and intimate conversations and making copies and telling all their friends about it. You know, that's a violation of your rights. Yeah. If you have a congressman that voted for that, say, hey, I'm not going to vote for you. You know what? I'm going to tell all my friends not to vote for you, too. You watch how fast it changes. And in the final moments of your show, the two people that we have before us as our candidates for president are a classic example. I don't think that the powers that be wanted either Obama or McCain, because neither of them fit the bill. They're not the right person for this. They're not part of the Eastern aristocracy. They're not part of the secret societies. Both of them stand for different things, but neither of them are part of the operation.
Huh.
They're both mavericks in their own way.
All right. Well, okay, that's kind of refreshing to hear, that's for sure. Well, we've only got just about a minute and a half left, so... You know, definitely, you know, thanks so much for joining us again and being such a huge part of the show and coming on a regular basis to give us insight on, I mean, some of these topics that are important. People should know, and get out there and research more about it. So, you know, most definitely. So give your website one more time so they can go check it out.
Well, you can get to it from shadowsinthedarkradio.com, but it's www.anomalies.net.
All right. All right, sounds good. All right, Alon, thank you so much for joining us again. I appreciate that.
No problem.
All right. All right, everyone, that was Olaf Phillips, our like I said, our resident conspiracy researcher. A very interesting topic, Operation Gladio. Get out there and do a little more research on it. Well, we've just got a few more seconds here before we get to close out the show. So, again, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And our guest this Thursday will be Duncan Lunan. The question is, did we make contact? Did we make contact with something out there? So you want to tune in for that. It's going to be very, very interesting. So, everyone, thanks so much for joining us tonight. This has been Shadows in the Dark, where the darkness is illuminated. Good night, everyone.
Shadows in the dark.